Hello and welcome to a special post-draft edition of Center Circle Live. Marty Thompson and Charlie O'Connor Clark here in Toronto.
In Toronto.
Yeah, so I've flown back, teleported back from Montreal. no, I actually did. I took a plane this morning. So.
Yeah,
it was chilly there, man. It was chilly.
It's chilly here.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much snow.
Yeah.
It's great, though.
You brought it back with you.
Classic, you know, we got lucky with the CPL schedule this year, I should add. You know?
Yeah.
We're wrapped up, and now there's snow seemingly coast to coast.
Yeah, just the poor U Sports kids had to play in the snow.
Oh, okay. Can we talk about that? So we went in, Armin and I obviously hosted it with Arcadio Marcuzzi, the draft. If you watched it, there's a lot of people that watched it, actually, which was great. But yeah, we went in for the weekend for the U Sports Championships, and yeah, freezing cold.
It looked like it.
Snow, I've never seen snow come and go in a game where there was like snow at halftime. They would like take it off and then it would come back. And I don't know if you've ever been to that stadium at University of Montreal.
I haven't.
It's beautiful.
Nice.
There were some, we posted some photos of it, but it kind of like backs onto the mountain.
Oh.
And the whole infrastructure of it is very like, it just reminds me of kind of like your classic like 60s or 70s Montreal. I don't know about that architecture, whenever you go to Montreal.
Olympic
just,
Stadium kind
yeah,
of vibe?
Yeah. Oh, and you could see Olympic Stadium from this stadium.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was huge.
That's cool.
I bought my Expos hat when I got out of there. So, okay, let's talk about this draft. So 14 selections as covered on the broadcast. Let's start with number one. We're going to have him on later today, but Corey Bent for the Halifax Wanderers.
From Cape Breton University.
Yeah, from Cape Breton. Two Cape Breton players going 1-2, which was interesting, and former Foothills players as well, we should mention. Let's quickly talk about Corey Bent and what you think his impact for Halifax could be this season.
I think that he could be a really exciting player. I mean, from what I've kind of heard and seen, it looks like he's kind of one of those maybe smaller, more agile attackers who is just kind of like a creative, kind of exciting player that I think Halifax could really use. Like, I think there's definitely a lot of value in them taking not just a really good player, but a really entertaining player who's going to score goals for them.
I guess he kind of matches the way they play already, right?
In a way.
Maybe the way that Steven wants to play, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, he had a great U Sports tournament. I think it was 3 goals and an assist across the 3 games that Cape Breton played.
Yeah, combined really well with Charlie Waters. We're going to get Charlie later.
We will get there, yeah. But yeah, no, I think that's maybe... I know that when we were doing our mock draft, he was kind of one of the guys that we thought about maybe would be going around first overall. I know that we had Charlie Waters going first. And we ended up going with Bent, but I really don't think that they can go too wrong with either pick there.
Yeah, see, that was kind of my thought, where there's 4 players from Cape Breton picked this year. There's 5 last year. It's clearly a premier, Peter Schala, we should mention, came from
Peter
Cape Breton.
Peter Schala, he was a tournament all-star at U Sports.
Yes, he was. So you're Halifax, you have the pick of the lot from essentially the best program, even though they didn't win.
Yeah.
We'll get to one later, but you know, I think that It's a tough choice, because we should maybe get into the Bent Waters controversy now. It was interesting to see the reaction after the draft, especially as we were going back and looking at it live, where, you know, people really thought Waters was going to go first. I was convinced he was going to go first as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it seemed kind of like the obvious. He scored a hat trick in the first game of the tournament, didn't he?
Yeah.
And just really was one of those names that kind of the couple weeks leading up to the draft, everybody was like, is going to be the guy. And as he started falling further and further down the draft as it was going live, people were surprised. They're like, what's going on with this guy?
Well, you know what? In Montreal, I think a lot of people picked up on it, but the idea that Charlie Waters fell all the way to 13th to just before Halifax was going to pick again, and then Valor selected Charlie Waters.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that was like a little bit of snipping on their part, but Valor's got to go with the best player available, and you know
that's who they got.
Yeah, and especially for a player like this, you know, regardless if it's outside of their catchment area, however you want to call it, or their local spot, you know, with a player like this who's probably pro ready, it makes sense, right?
Well, I mean, we talk about him being outside of the catchment area. He's not from Nova Scotia.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So that's, I mean, it might be a little bit different if he was like a super local kid, but I mean, Cape Breton has this, like a lot of their players are coming from overseas to play Canadian university soccer, which is really interesting. But yeah, if you're Valor, you're really happy that you've gotten a guy like him at a 13th overall. If you're Steven Hart, you're not so happy, maybe.
Waters is just so good off the ball. His movement is unreal. He's maybe not the most athletic kid out there, but I don't know. He has it all. We saw him sort of like drift out of of the center and then have like, say, Bent cutting in and just have these wicked, like, kind of like, you know, chipped through passes and stuff like that. Just like long, exciting passing play that you wouldn't necessarily see from a player like that or you would expect.
Yeah, they seemed like they were just a really well-drilled team that was kind of in sync with each other with all these players that all seem fairly versatile. Like, they all seemed like they can fit in with a lot of different styles of play, which is probably something that's good for teams like both Valor and Halifax, who need a bit of a boost after maybe a couple stumbling blocks in the first season.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about Bitar and Gardner as well. So there were two repeat picks this year. Gabriel Bitar going back to Cavalry, and then Tommy Gardner going back to Pacific. Of course, Bitar was a first overall. Gardner was a sixth, so he's still a first-round pick from last year. The quotes from Tommy Wheeldon Jr. on the broadcast when we were talking to him, I thought they were quite interesting, basically saying, like, look, we had lots of time with them. You know, he only made one appearance for Cavalry, yes, but you have to think about the entire preseason going down to the Dominican, right? He was fighting for a spot with Easton Ungaro at the time, and then, you know, going into this whole season. So, yeah, just trying to invest the time in the right player, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for, I guess, in a way, it's asset management. Like, if you're going to spend time on developing a player, you're going to want to bring him back instead of starting from scratch with somebody else who doesn't know kind of the way that you play and the way that Tommy Wheeldon Jr. wants him to be as a player. So there's definitely something to be said for that. I mean, it was just really competitive in Cavalry last season. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably a lot of the reason that he couldn't really crack the lineup. But I mean, Tommy Wheeldon Jr. seems to really like the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like he's invested in having him around. So,
well, he is versatile too, right? He can play on the wings too, which I don't think he necessarily did at Cavalry, but yeah, I mean, if he's got the opportunity to play multiple positions, there's a chance there, right?
Yeah, you'd have to think so. I mean, he's unlikely to be able to make much impact in the squad if he goes in and he's like, I'm a striker, I can only play as a striker, right?
Yeah, that's very true.
You can't really walk into one of the top teams in the league demanding to play one position, so like, you have to be versatile, right?
So Tommy Gardner, which came out of UBC and Whitecaps Academy as well, so obviously tried and true for many players at Pacific FC, but
yeah,
he had some good quotes. We talked to him there at Montreal, and he was basically saying, like, look, Pacific is still the team I want to go to. His pick last year, knee injury didn't make it, or an ankle injury, I think, actually. But yeah, very technical player and a good attacking midfielder, which I think maybe Pacific FC were in need of last year.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of just had to feel for the guy because he was picked in the first round and he was hoping to get minutes with Pacific, and then just injury, just done, season over. So, like, I think this is probably a even less surprising redraft of a guy because Pacific just didn't even get to see him, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I actually don't know when he got injured. Like, was he in training camp with them? Or
actually, I think it was late in 2018, I believe. I don't even think he had necessarily...
So he never even really trained with Pacific.
Yeah. 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 But he was familiar enough, and he's a second year as well.
Yeah.
That's one really interesting thing. We're going to ask Corey about this later, but the idea of picking, like, there was a couple first years picked this year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you couldn't pick a graduating player, but it was interesting what year is perhaps like the best time to choose a player and for what reason.
Yeah, some teams kind of had different strategies. I mean, York 9 went with a 17-year-old.
Yeah,
Isaiah Johnston. Which is interesting.
but he had spent time with York 9 with training camp. Yeah. But yeah, as we mentioned on the broadcast, he's probably the youngest player in U Sports Soccer because he was like December born, 17.
Yeah, it's hard to be like any younger than that. Like, you'd have to be like, what, the few days after him?
Yeah, exactly. But so then, you know, for you pick a first year, is the idea you have him in, and then if he's not going to crack the lineup, which, you know, there's a chance, pretty good chance he won't, the idea that he maybe when he graduates he comes back and you give him a good enough impression, like, I'm interested to see how that'll pan out over the next couple years.
Because, like, if you want to invest in a guy like that, do you have to use one of your picks on him every year?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I'm not sure if that rule is going to stay per se, because now that we see teams kind of going back to the same player, we'll have to see for 2020. But which team had the best draft, do you think, Charlie?
So I think that for me, the best draft was probably one of the Ontario teams.
Yeah.
I think York 9 really, really wins out with getting Stefan Karjovanovic in fifth overall. He's Carlton striker. I mean, they get the Carlton striker who had an incredible season in the OUA, I think.
Yeah, he had 35 goals in 37 games total across 3 years.
Yeah, and I know that we heard his name a lot in kind of the week leading up, not just because it's a recognizable name.
True.
that's sometimes tough to pronounce, but yeah, I think he was really one of those kind of higher touted attacking players, like out and out strikers, which is something that York 9 really needs.
So right? he's good enough to play for Blainville last year and played against York 9.
He did play against York 9.
Yeah, coming off as a substitute. Yeah, we saw a bit of him there in the in one of the semifinal matches. And
yeah
very quick, very good on the ball. He worked, actually, you know what? He worked very similar to Bitar in a very similar way, similar player. And yeah, he's not very big. He's 5'9", so I'm not sure if that's going to be an issue. Maybe they'll push him out wide. And then the other pick, I guess, that the York 9 got was Isaiah Johnson, as we said. But he's quick. He's 17, super young, but very high potential. He had a good year with Woodbridge in League One, and we're hearing that he's one of the better Ontario prospects out there right now.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of guys have been, or a lot of clubs have been, kind of looking for his signature, and he chose to go the U Sports route, and it might work out for him.
yeah, we'll have to see. Okay, yeah. And then Forge and as you mentioned, yeah.
I mean, I think some people were surprised when they went with Gabriel Balbinotti at the end of the first round, but I mean, he was arguably the best player on the national champions, so
yeah. He led that team. Yeah, well, in that semifinal when they beat Carlton, we spoke to him after, and I've never seen a player so much the center of attention after winning. He scored the goal in extra time, but you could tell he was like the integral part, because he's a first year at that school, which is hard to believe.
UQTR, we should probably say. I don't know if we mentioned it.
At Trois-Rivières, and he, you know, came with experience with FC Montreal, spent last year with Ottawa Fury. Like he's got a lot of pedigree, and to kind of come in and to make such an impact on a program like that, you have to be impressed. He's great movement, great finisher as well.
Yeah, and then right after that, with the next pick of the draft, Forge gets Alec Aziz, who could be a playmaker of the future.
Yeah,
he's just a really talented player. He's a
NCAA experience with South Florida.
Yeah, with South Florida, he was he's played Von Azzurri in Oakville in League One. He's played in the PDL in Portland.
Yeah.
And I know that he was really just one of the best, probably arguably the best attacking midfielder in the OUA this season. I think he led the league in assists for most of the year. And I mean, Guelph kind of stumbled at the end of the season. It was a bit of an upset, I think, when they weren't in a national championship. But
Jace Kostopoulos, the last Forge pick, was on that team. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So if he somehow ends up back in Forge, then there'll be some familiarity there.
Yeah, for me, it's interesting. Like, I do like Valor's picks, obviously getting Charlie Waters and Marcus Campanile second overall.
Yeah.
He seems like a really tidy midfielder. And then, I don't know, but I really want to pick Pacific, because Jan Paredes Glassmacher, to me, looks like the real deal.
Yeah.
And he's kind of coming in at a good age. I think he's like 22, 23.
Was it you that said he's the next Peter Schella from this draft? I mean,
I believe Armin did. I just like to clarify. Well, you know what? Okay, so he has a very similar pedigree. He's European trained and very, very technical on the ball, maybe more than what Peter Schella is, I would say.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's a huge body. He looks like he's CPL ready, man. He looks like he could slot into that back line. And then obviously Tommy Gardner, we haven't seen him, but you know, if you're going to get two picks from one team, must be pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, they clearly value him highly enough to do that, so.
And we're now joined by Corey Bent, the first overall selection from the 2019 CPL U Sports Draft from Cape Breton University to Halifax Wanderers. Corey, how does that sound?
Still overwhelming, actually. you know, I was hoping that I'd be able to stay close to my university, and you know, I still have a lot of friends in the area. I know Halifax quite well. I've been around the area for 4 years, so yeah, I'm looking forward to getting down there.
Sweet. Yeah, I mean, what's the kind of connection between this school and the Halifax Wanderers, in that, you know, you've already seen Peter Schella, someone you're pretty close with on the team, make the jump? You know, what's this kind of connection? Is this something that you see could be maybe forming between the school and this professional club?
Well, yeah, you know, like we're nationally ranked every year, and we have good players come through this program. Dino runs a great shop here, so I think it's only fair that Halifax have the first look at the school closest to them. There's lots of other good players, obviously, in and around the Atlantic provinces, but like you said, we've gone to the Nationals. The 4 years I've been here, we've always competed well and we've always shown ourselves well. So I think the lads have deserved it. You know, I get to see all the hard work that gets put in behind the scenes. So, yeah, we're all represented. So fortunately, Halifax are close enough to get the first look.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually a pretty big night for Cape Breton in general. There were four guys picked in the 2019 draft. What?
Yeah.
But I'm sure that you know that all the other three. So what does that kind of say about the quality of the players that are up there in Cape Breton?
Well, it speaks volumes. You know, I know how good each and every one of these players are. I see what they do off the field. You know, I live with two of them. So I get to see what happens and how they're thinking, how they're moving. And congratulations to all the other boys that got drafted. I'm really proud of the lads for being able to represent our university on this level.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit more about Peter and how he kind of came back to the school. So I'm assuming you watched a lot of Halifax Wanderers games this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so you kind of watched him play and then he came back. What kind of experiences did he have to say about the club and about the professional environment, and what kind of vibe did you get off of him?
Well, he gave off a great vibe. You know, he told me everything that I'd experienced. You know, I speak to him pretty much every day. And he was one of the main reasons that I really wanted to go and play in front of mainly the fans there. You know, he told me that it's one of the most surreal experiences he's had. And I'd love it there if I ever got the opportunity to go there. And fortunately for me, Stephen was nice enough to pick me first. So, yeah, I'm really excited. He told me everything, you know, from the top to the bottom, all the details. So he said he doesn't really want me to have any surprises when I go there. I actually just spoke to him this morning. He's enjoying some time in Montreal. But, yeah, I'm really excited to get down there. He's not had a bad word to say about the club.
Yeah, so in terms of your future, you're in fourth year, correct?
Yeah.
So is the idea that you've got maybe one more year of schooling, or how is that going to shake out for you?
Possibly. Obviously, like, it's still early days. I actually finished my degree. I'm possible to finish my degree in May. So it's looking like it might be that way. But, you know, I don't know yet. I've barely spoken to my dad. There's been a lot of things going on recently, so... I'm still working that out. I'm pretty sure it's something that I'll speak to Stephen and the Wanderers about later on. But like I said, right now, I haven't had much contact with Stephen. He's traveling.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting with a draft like this, right? Where the idea that you could pick sort of anywhere from, like, Isaiah, your teammate, a first year,
yeah,
we talked about in the first segment, to picking someone who, you know, could potentially be playing professional way past August, right? Is that something that you're kind of like, if you're... It'd be hard not to think about, right? If you come in and you make a good impression, that opportunity's there. Is that something that you've considered at this point?
Well, yeah, it's a huge incentive. You know, like, I actually live with Isaiah as well. so it's good for our room, I guess. But
well, until you guys start playing, then it might not be.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it gives the managers a little bit of flexibility. You could either have someone that you think may be ready to impact the league on day one, or you might be able to have a little project pick, you know. So it's great to have that kind of flexibility, and I think it's a great partnership between U Sports and the Canadian Premier League to be able to protect players' eligibility. I think it's massive for university players to have an incentive to really push on and really chase the dream that they've been dreaming of, playing professional football in Canada. So I think it's a great partnership. I hope it keeps on developing.
So one thing that's maybe a little interesting, especially about the Cape Breton program, is that a lot of guys are coming over there from overseas, like including yourself and a lot of your teammates
that
got drafted. What's that experience kind of like, coming from England, coming from academies there and coming to play university soccer in Canada and now to playing professional here?
Well, you'd be surprised, actually. I fitted in really quickly here. You know, luckily for me, one of the reasons I came here is because they already had internationals. You know, it takes off the breaking down period where, like, you're getting used to other people's cultures and stuff. Like I said, all the lads here were really close. a lot of us come from quite close together back home. So it's nice to be able to come to somewhere that feels like a bit of a home away from home. Like you said, we all gelled really quickly, and the results showed on the pitch. So, you know, I was quite happy to come here. I didn't really get a chance to visit before I came here. It's not really one that's around the corner or anything.
You can look on it on a map and you're like, that looks like a really interesting island. There's a giant lake in the middle. What's with that?
Yeah. Well, it's number one island in Canada, apparently. So I've been fortunate enough to live here for 4 years. But yeah, it's been a great experience for me. And I know a lot of the lads would say the same about this program, this island, and the people that we represent every time we put the jersey on. So I have nothing bad to say about the program and the coaches and everyone who support us.
Well, glad to see that you're staying out east. Before we let we go, though, we'll let you go. We should, you know, ask you about these HFX Wanderers fans. You know, and you know, probably Peter Schalle. You probably saw the photos of him up in the stands, probably all sunburnt in the middle of August. But you know, what's your words to them? You know, this passionate fan base that has appeared in Nova Scotia.
Well, I'm really looking forward to be able to represent them on the stage. You know, I really want to get in front of the fans. I've been a part of it. You know, I've been to the Wanderers grounds. I've been in the stands. I've heard everything about them. So I'm really looking forward to getting in front of them and showing them what I'm capable of, and hopefully bring some success to the club. Like I said, I'm really excited to just get in front of them and see what the atmosphere is really like.
Quickly switching focus here to the Canadian men's national team. Another massive game.
Big week.
The last big week of.
Here we go.
There was another game going on this weekend. I can't remember. Well, hey, we'll get to that.
The U-Sports national champion.
Yeah. We'll get to whatever else happened this past week later. But I guess the last big game of a big 2019 for Canada, taking on the U.S. in Orlando, 7 p.m. on Friday. That game is on One Soccer. So Canada, we don't need to remind you. Beat the U.S. At BMO Field now, I guess, just about a month ago. But now going into this game, and we should mention Dominic Sator getting the call up here for Cavalry FC, along with Amir Didic. So now two CPL players in the camp.
Sator is the third Canadian Premier League player to get that call after Didic and Marco Carducci the first time. And good for him.
Yeah.
He's earned it.
It is very well deserved, right? I mean, we looked at him, especially when Didic got called up. I think that those are two players that really deserve it.
Yeah.
So we're looking at this squad, and we've seen it. There isn't a whole lot of turnover. I thought it was very funny I thought it was interesting that Donil Henry was called up, even though he couldn't play for that U.S. game.
Yeah.
Because you kind of saw that Herdman's looking to maybe build this core and this consistency. So, you know, what kind of variations are we expected to see from that team that beat the U.S.? A very interesting team, I should add.
It's interesting. I mean, because Canada kind of set up in a different way to how they normally do. So last time they played ES, they had that kind of midfield box, and they had Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David up top together, which weirdly worked well.
Yeah, it did.
I wasn't so sure it would, like without Lucas Cavallini starting at least. But I don't know, like does John Herdman go with the same thing? Or, I mean, we don't know exactly what the health of Marc-Anthony Kay is.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah, I think that the way that system worked was that if your midfield is able to work as well as it did, you don't necessarily need to have a big hold-up option.
No.
Because if you're able to win the ball high up the pitch, it's just a matter of trying to find like one or two piercing balls and you're done, right?
And I mean, the American midfield will arguably be weaker this time around anyway, because Michael Bradley's not there, and they won't have an outlet option of Christian Pulisic on the wing either. So, I mean, there isn't much reason to change it up. But that said, if you're looking to get the best out of Alphonso Davies, he's played like four incredible games in a row at Bayern Munich at left back.
Yeah.
He pocketed both of Borussia Dortmund's like arguably best players on, I believe it was on Saturday.
Yeah.
Bayern beat them 4-0, and Davies was maybe the best player on the field.
Under a new coach as well.
Under a new coach. So I don't know. I mean, that's where he's been in form, but do you have him in camp long enough to kind of get him back into that purely attacking mindset?
It's interesting whenever you see Davies go back, because I was at the start of the year, you know, even after the Gold Cup, I was still thinking that Davies should be playing left back, but then now whenever Herdman puts him there, I'm not convinced.
Yeah.
But that's maybe not a fault on the player per se, but just a fault on the system, where he's going to work better, you know, higher up the pitch, especially alongside Jonathan David, clearly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Canada has this wealth of speed and kind of young, exciting attacking players. And the way John Herdman has talked about Alphonso Davies, he really sees him as an attacking player. I mean, that maybe is a little easier to see when he goes with that 4-3-3 that he's gone with so many times. But even in this setup, I mean, Alphonso Davies scored a goal against the U.S. Like, we can't really fault him for that.
Yeah, it's very true.
So, I don't know. It's a tough call.
Predictions for Friday?
Predictions for a scoreline?
Yeah. So we'll do a little bit of a background here while you think of which scoreline is the best one to answer. So, you know, if Canada wins or draws in Orlando, they're going to go to the Final Four of the Nations League.
Yeah.
So that'll be next year. It's also worth reading. Just wrote an app exclusive for CanPL or for the Center Circle Live app, and then later on CanPL.ca later this week. But, you know, the more wins Canada can get here, the closer they're going to get to the hex. They're already kind of in the hex, and that is that'll be decided, I believe, in June of next year.
Yeah.
So if you're able to beat the U.S. and then go into this Nations League quarterfinal or semifinal, rather, it just gives you more opportunity to climb the ladder, right?
Because there are teams kind of breathing down their necks. I know El Salvador is around. I think Curaçao has had a pretty good Nations League run here, so they're one of the biggest threats. So, you just have to keep winning. I mean,
yeah.
Also, if you do get through the Nations League group, then you guarantee yourself at least another important international match, which could be more points. So, I mean, they don't have any friendlies scheduled. So,
yeah. Well, coming into a big dead zone, right?
Going,
especially in North America, going from November to March. But
yeah,
I think it might be like, I'm thinking like a 1-1 draw or something like that.
See, I want to go with that, but I just feel like looking at the squads that have come out now and looking at the way Canada played last time, this U.S. team is markedly worse than the last one I saw.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, we were talking about who would play in the midfield. Like, yeah, Will Trapp.
Will Trapp. It'll be, I guess, Christian Roldan and then Weston McKennie.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they're under a lot more pressure than they were last time, I think. Especially Greg Berhalter, the coach, and they are at home in Orlando, and they will feel a little slighted having lost to Canada so decisively. But even still, I didn't think that Canada was more talented than the U.S. before the last game, but heading into this one, it's hard not to say they are.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Canada. I think this could be another. I'd say maybe a 2-1. I'm gonna go 2-1.
Okay, that's not bad. 3-1. Was the score on the weekend for MLS Cup. Toronto FC versus Seattle Sounders FC. Seattle, I guess, winning the rubber match. Best 2 out of 3 over TFC.
And congratulations to Seattle for scoring their first ever goal in an MLS Cup final and then scoring 2 more.
There it is. Yeah, I mean, that first half was very interesting, and I think every TFC fan will tell you that was their opportunity, right?
Yeah, I think TFC fans would be less disappointed if they had just been dominated from the start, because they were the better team in the first half.
True.
And I mean, I don't really know how optimistic people were even heading into the game, because it kind of felt almost weird that TFC had got there in the first place.
Wasn't it?
A very strange season. But once they started playing really well in the first half of the cup final, people were like, this could totally happen.
Yeah. I think it was one of those situations, maybe similar to 2016, where you get there and, like, Pozuelo has played how many games?
80 games in the last, like, 18 months or something.
Yeah, and you're kind of, like, coming in. He's, like, your best player. You don't have... I know a lot of people are talking about Altidore, and he came on and scored, obviously, which is great, and it was a great header.
It was.
But, yeah, there was the lead-up to people saying, oh, Altidore might not be healthy. Well, they made it to the final without him. So, but, yeah, to have him, you know, during that whole run might have helped, but... Yeah, it just didn't quite seem like the same.
Yeah,
run.
I just don't know. It maybe just wasn't meant to be. Like, they had so much of the ball in the first half, and they looked more dangerous, but they just couldn't really get anything going inside the box. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't really have any real chances.
No, outside
of like the very end of the game when they actually scored. Right.
There was a couple of nice moves like on the outside when they would have just like kind of entering the box from the side, but wasn't really anything of note. But that Altidore header was. Interesting.
Yeah, it's not a way that they typically score goals.
Yeah.
The aerial duels or headers or anything like that. So that was kind of refreshing, but too little too late, eh?
That was very late, by the way. Yeah, because we were in Montreal and yeah, just like trying to catch a bit of the game, and then near the end, and yeah, I was like, oh, they scored. It was ready to death. Okay. Okay, well, we will be back in 2 weeks' time for another episode of Center Circle Live. We're taking maybe a little more of holiday hours, per se, moving in. But there's lots of player signings coming up. Make sure to check campiel.ca for that, and lots of draft coverage as well. We'll see you in 2 weeks.